Tennessee just sounds perfect. Whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Hey, this is Annie, and welcome to Stuff Mom Never Told You, a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works. And today, Samantha is once again joining us.
Howdy, hey.
Hey. Thanks so much for being here, as always.
And as always.
Yes.
I like that.
This episode, I'm really relying on you a lot because this is something that I think you have had a lot of personal experience with.
And you and I, when we were having a discussion on what these episodes and what the series should look like, I was very passionate about wanting to talk about my peoples. Mm-hmm. The caseworkers out there, the therapists, the trauma workers, the second responders, because I think we don't talk enough about helping and caring for those people who often see the worst in the worst of society. So, yeah, here we go, because I'm going to talk a lot about personal experiences. I hope you're ready.
Yeah, because we're talking about empathy and having too much of it, because on this— if we were looking at an arc of our miniseries, we're kind of on the other end. We're like towards the end of the season.
Right.
And a lot of people do, after they go through a traumatic event, they do feel inspired, or even like through survivor's guilt, or there's something that makes them want to help others so that they can either prevent it from happening to others or help other people who've gone through something similar work through it.
Right.
And that can be something very triggering, re-traumatizing. This question of empathy and can you have too much of it?
Can you have too much? And you and I, as you were researching, I remember you were like, oh my gosh, this and this. And I was like, yeah, that's me. I'm a problem.
Well, before we get into it, trigger warnings for death, trauma, secondary trauma, and suicide.
Right. And specifically with those, we're talking a little bit about how these can affect secondary trauma and trauma can affect your daily life. And we talked about that earlier with like how it comes out and the symptoms and a part of that. And some of the bad coping ideas would be some of these things that we're talking about. And it can't happen without you being the one being victimized, like personally victimized.
Right. And I love a dictionary.
Yes.
A dictionary
we
definition.
We need to understand. People don't know.
Right. So let's define empathy. And this is from dictionary.com. The psychological identification with or vicarious experiencing of the feelings, thoughts, or attitudes of another. The brain, I almost went on this whole thing where I got fascinated with the science of it. But
right.
The brain developed these mirror neurons specifically for empathy to recognize if someone was a friend or an enemy.
That's interesting. I know, like, a part of that question was, is it genetics? Is it environmental? Can it be learned? Whatever. But it comes down to it can be both.
Right.
Obviously, with everything. But there's also those, I mean, they talked about those who have less empathy could actually have a higher risk of autism.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it's really fascinating to see. Part of that is to be able to read others, and that would mm-hmm. be why you would read if they're a friend or an enemy.
Right. And that's obviously a simplification of a very
right. big thing.
Yes, but I wanted to include it in there because I did find it so fun to read about. And one thing I want to include as well is the difference from sympathy versus empathy. So sympathy is the fact or power of sharing the feelings of another, especially in sorrow or trouble, feeling compassion or commiseration. Every time I hear that word, I think of the Blink 182 song. All the small things. Who's right. out there? They
right.
know.
And 90s reference. There we go. The 90s? Or 2000? That was 90s,
right?
90. Okay, I'm old.
I actually am not sure. So practicing good empathy means creating a safe space to identify and understand the feelings of others as opposed to straight mirroring.
Right. So a lot of that is also being able to dig into yourself and kind of remembering if you went through something similar,
right.
that emotion rather.
Mm-hmm. And there's a couple of types of empathy. There's affective empathy, which is the I know how you feel. Empathy, you can feel what other people are feeling and experience compassion for them. There's cognitive empathy. This is knowing and understanding the emotions of others, getting a more full picture of how they feel. And then there is excess or hyper empathy. So I would call this like the sponge equivalent of mm-hmm. empathy. Or I imagine if Mantis couldn't turn off her or control her powers in Guardians of the Galaxy, this would be her.
Right.
But that's all theory. So you suffer from the emotions of others.
Exactly. And I was going to say, to kind of go back to the scientific portion of that, it could be a superpower or it could be a hindrance for sure if you could truly feel what that person is feeling, much like Mantis.
Mm-hmm.
That's a superpower, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
She had Thanos.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
She did until...
Peter Quill.
That Quill. He ruined everything with his hubris.
This is great, too, Marvel.
I'm just going to talk all about this now.
Okay, cool.
I'm with you. I'm here with you.
All right, awesome.
But yeah, and also with the effective empathy, I was going to say that's one of those that kind of can actually hinder a conversation mm-hmm. if it comes back to the I know how you feel, I know this, I know
right,
that,
right,
which
right.
I know is a mistake some therapists and some caseworkers have made mm-hmm. in trying to be overly empathetic,
right.
but kind of it almost dismisses the others because it becomes too common. You know what I mean? It feels like, oh, you feel that way. I'm not an unusual or something like that. Not that you
sure.
want to be unusual, but sometimes it overtakes the conversation and you need to be with them in that moment instead of, you'll get past it. I've been
right.
there type of thing.
Right.
And then the excessive or hyper empathy, which you and I talked about, I was like, yeah, I struggle. I'm not going to say I could completely be diagnosed with this, but I know for me, when I watch movies that have intense, humiliating things, I cannot watch it. It took me, so when was The Office originally out?
Oh, dear.
Long time
2000...
ago.
2000.
Something.
No, 12. I don't know.
That is not correct. Okay. I was like, it's not 2012. That is wrong. Okay. Let me look it up. Anyway, when that show came out, I could not watch it because I remember watching the first episode and cringing so hard that I immediately had to turn it off. Like, my face turned red. My heart kind of had this
yeah.
anxiety. And I was like, nope, nope, nope. Now, yeah, it came out in 2005. Last year, I was only seven years old. You were way off.
Sorry.
So yes, The Office came out in 2005 when I originally tried to watch it because everybody was in love with the show.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, no, oh my God, no, this is the worst thing ever. And for me, The Office English version is even worse. And I still can't get past season one. I don't think I passed the first three episodes because
it was the
British version. I was like, I can't do this.
But yeah, that one's... Mm-hmm.
awful, cringe, like beyond cringeworthy. Like I physically cannot sit to watch it. And now, like 2000, I think I've watched it for the first time last year. Now I watch it all the time because I know when to fast forward it. Yeah. That's how I watch it now. Mm-hmm. Any cringeworthy, I just fast forward it through. So usually,
like every episode, so 2 minutes long.
Yeah, pretty much all I'm watching is like the whole antics between Dwight and Andy and Jim, mm-hmm. and Jim and Pam. Like that's pretty much the whole.
Right, Michael's been erased.
Michael does kindly does not exist. Essentially,
they've got no manager.
No. Who's Michael? But yeah, that's how I watch things. But also, when I go to movies, if I don't know what to expect, I take, even if it's like 90 to 100 degrees outside, I'll have a jacket or a blanket so I can hide underneath it, mm-hmm. and I'll cover my face and cover my ears. Like that's the level that I get to. Mm-hmm. So it's, I definitely understand that. And even in work, like I will have moments where I read a case, and I've told people, one of the things I have to do is read about their past charges and or events or whatever the situation was to put us to that moment. So if there's been a crime committed, there's been that, like I feel the intensity of either the victim or the kid so much that I have to put it aside, and it can break me down. To the point that sometimes I've been questioned, is this a good job for you? But at the same time, at least partially to me, like, no, but it motivates me too. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I know that, and I know I'm not the only one. We all have different ways. Because I was talking to my coworker today, and I asked her, how did she handle it? And she just said, literally says, I make myself forget.
Wow.
Because that's the level of that excess empathy, that mm-hmm. you don't know how to quite turn it off, and you have to figure out your defense mechanisms.
Right. And I found this quote I wanted to include from Emmett Fitzgerald. I had never been told that empathy is a finite resource. You can run out. As a normal psychological response, you cannot give of yourself again and again and again without replenishing.
Right. And I would think that's where we would talk about burnout. And you talk about burnout. And I know you mentioned this later, but compassion fatigue.
Yes.
And how it does wear you down. And part of that is the mere fact, when I look through some of the studies, people like doctors and nurses and who are hands-on mm-hmm. have, I think, their rate of suicide is like 31%, which is not as high as I thought it would be. Mm-hmm. And honestly, social workers are even less. That surprised me, too, because I assumed social workers and caseworkers would have that mindset. But I know addiction is pretty high.
Yeah.
Relationship failures are pretty high for social workers and caseworkers and therapists and such. But it is. It's one of those things that you do eventually run out. And it gets to the point that I call it being desensitized.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't call it, but it's being desensitized to what it is and becoming more and more crass and being more and more hardened.
Yeah.
And I hate that because that's being in social work for 10 years. I feel like nothing affects me as much. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong. I still have breakdowns and I still look for the good. But I do feel like I've become a little more harsh and more critical of mm-hmm. today's society because of all the things that I've had to try to learn to deal with and or empathize with and or even try to fix.
Yeah, and one of the thing you said about your friend kind of making yourself forget reminded me of something I read, and it was an account from a new nurse, and she witnessed, I think, somebody die, and she was so upset and like was trying to pull herself together and saw the nurse who had been there longer than her completely fine, and she asked that nurse, like, how are you, how did you get to this point, I need to have this control that you did, and
right.
and the other nurse said to her, I wish I could still feel things like you
right.
could,
right,
and I think that's a pretty powerful story,
right, and it becomes a constant thing. I remember when I started with the Family and Children Services and being an investigator, one of the first things that I learned is all people coming in with bright-eyed, bushy-tail hopes
yeah.
of saving the world. And don't get me wrong, that's the whole reason I went into social work. I wanted to save the world. I want to save the kids. I want to help these women. I want to empower others. And then a year later, I'm like, no, I'm putting Band-Aids on, you know, gunshot wounds, essentially,
yeah.
and hoping for the best. Or I'm picking, I remember using the term picking the lesser evil all the time because it literally was, do I take this child away from something that they're used to with a parent that they grew up with, or do I put them into a new situation that's a better environment, but they are taken away and they have nothing familiar, as well as because they're older, they're probably never going to find stability. again. You know, it's kind of like at least it was a bad stability, but it was stability or new stability without the actual grounding of family and caring. And I remember just having to sit with the judges. Like, I had one of the best judges that I worked with, as well as lawyers, being like, what is the better choice? And oftentimes I would look and say, it's better for them to be with a family with us, looking on, hopefully, instead of yanking them out of a placement and putting them in this situation. And, you know, I want to give a shout out to all the foster care parents, too. Like, I don't think enough credit is given to the ones that are really great. Because I'm going to tell you, there's some not great ones, just like in anything else. But the great ones are taken advantage of, and they are the first to be burned out immediately. And I'd say burnout probably 6 months in. Wow. Because if a DFACS worker or a family and children's service worker who's a foster care worker find one good family, they will try to use them all the time.
Right.
Because we know what to expect. We know they'll do a good job. And oftentimes it's so taxing on them with the very little support they get. And I'm going to tell you, majority of the people who think you get money, that's not a thing. It can be a buildup. Like, if you have 10 kids in your home and you have some kind of backing, maybe things, it can happen. It has happened. But oftentimes this is not about money. And when we look at these foster parents and the good ones, we run them into the ground. And I could see that they are probably one of the first to be like, I can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
And that's where we leave in such a mess of not having enough homes for some of these teenagers who are just trying to find something safe.
Yeah, and while empathy is
right
generally a good thing and can help you not get replaced by robots in the future, according to research. It's one of the few things that robots have not figured out.
That's what I said. I argued with someone about that. I'm like, social workers will not be replaced. Caseworkers and therapists will not be replaced by robots, but people have argued with me. I don't understand how they would learn empathy.
Well, now that you said that, they're going to figure it out.
Oh, no.
It just took you saying it on a podcast. That's all they needed.
And it died.
I believe it's... Yeah, it's like a complex social job that requires some kind of empathy. Anyway, that's a different podcast.
And we're going to talk about the droids.
Well, we should.
Yeah.
But right now we're talking about empathy. And yes, too much of it can be a bad thing. And we'll get into that. But first, let's take a quick break for a word from our sponsor.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Tennessee just sounds perfect, whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands. Not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly boring since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yay.
Empathy can become a bad thing if it starts to impact your mental, emotional, and or physical health, which we've been talking about all these
things.
It can lead to high concentrations of the stress hormone cortisol and feelings of depression, guilt, pain, exhaustion, being overwhelmed. all of which can lead to burnout, especially if you take on the responsibility of fixing someone else's problems. Yes.
Which is, yeah.
They have they want to fix their problems. You can't.
And I think I may have used this word before, and I realized later that a lot of people don't understand what it is, parentified. Mm-hmm. And that's when which a child takes on the role of a caretaker or the parent. So you'll see this with families who have drug issues in the home. I would run into that all the time where I would see the parent would be passed out, but there's two kids, a five-year-old and two-year-old, and the five-year-old would be taking care of the two-year-old. Mm-hmm. And also, you and I talked about the fact earlier in our own trauma when people would be like, oh, you're so adult, you're so mature, which is not necessarily a healthy thing. And to me, it is very unhealthy when a child can't be a child. That's what I like to say. Because for myself, I think I had talked about this earlier, too, when my mom and I were talking about my relationship with her growing up, and then my brother, who is their biological child, and I am the adopted and was brought here when I was 7, our relationships were so different. Mm-hmm. And I remember at one point she was trying to talk about the brother, you know, being used to being the only child, the youngest child, and me, you know, whatever. And she was like, you were already an adult when I got you, is how she put it. And she was right, because I was always in survival mode. Mm-hmm. And so for me, coming to a home does not make me a child again. That doesn't immediately happen. And I think part of my empathy comes from wanting to take care of myself as well as others, because that's what I did. That's what I've known. Like, that's the only thing I've known. And I see that in a lot of younger kids as well. And if you kind of look at, like, oldest kids, the older kids, they're much like the bossy ones. They're much like that as well. And I think it's the caretaker coming out in them. Maybe it's the empathy of wanting to care for everyone and making sure they're safe and feeling like that's their part of their responsibility. But yeah, that's an interesting thing. And I think I just went on a tangent.
The middle child, where do I fall?
The peace. Middle children try to keep the peace. That's what I have seen.
I would agree with that. Well, I don't want to make any sweeping generalizations.
No, that's a big generalization.
In my case, yes.
That's what I see.
So if you do have too much empathy or you're burning out from empathy, some things you might start doing or notice yourself start doing is you might start pushing people away if you're feeling their emotions. That makes sense. If you're suffering from their emotions, you might walk into a room with people and experience a shift in emotion without knowing why, before anyone has said anything to you. You might feel physical pain. You might not be able to stop thinking about the other person's pain. The thought of going to an event with someone with an emotional state that will impact you might fill you with dread.
Yeah. Honestly, I know people who have too much empathy that are not in my field can't be around me. And I know, I'm like, yeah, I understand that. I'm exhausting. I'm like the negative Nelly of the group, because if I've had a rough day, which I walked in today, I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm a mess, y'all. It literally becomes taxing for others around me. And I recognize that. I think that's part of the reason I'm also an introvert. I'm like, y'all can't deal with me today. In which I have to recognize, yep, I've had a really stressful day, or I've had a really hard week, or I've had a really traumatic week, and I can't figure out how not to let this affect me on a daily basis, or let my every moment, normal moment, be affected by this. And that's kind of like, I think we talked about it in the trauma episode about our coping mechanism. Mm-hmm. I have 2 or 3 or 4 people that I trust that know me well enough that they can handle that, or also they can tell me to stop. Mm-hmm. Because that's part of that, too. And because a few of those people are social workers and or in the field as well, and they also have their own dilemma where we both have to be like, okay, I can't hear about this right now.
Right.
And that's that line. And honestly, I definitely felt that physical pain.
Yeah,
I definitely had I think I told the story about my neck giving out for weeks at a time because I was so stressed, and I was so worried about these children dying and or something happening because I didn't do something fast enough, or being blamed for it. And it that came from, like, not only did these individual things happen, but it was definitely a buildup. So you get stressed out. I stopped sleeping. My neck started hurting. I started getting tense. Everything hit into, and I'm shut down. Mm-hmm. Same thing up there. I used to get sick all the time. And I mean, like, flu symptoms and all of that. And it was a lot to do with the fact that I wasn't taking care of myself. We all know sleep is very, very, very important. And if you have anxiety attacks, panic attacks, whatever, and you can't sleep, that disrupts everything.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's part of the whole empathy portion is, how do you let it go?
Yeah.
And I know later on we're going to talk, we talked to Dr. Jane, mm-hmm. who I'm always like, I'm already fascinated by, and I've been talking about people to her. No, let me try that again. I've been talking to people about her mm-hmm. because I think she's fascinating. I think she's got some really groundbreaking concepts when it comes to PTSD and treatment of PTSD.
Yeah.
Which, again, we're going to talk about later. But I know that the whole idea is you have to be able to separate yourself. Mm-hmm. But it's almost impossible sometimes because you have that, again, that idea that you're going to come and fix something.
Yeah.
And when you fail, it is one of the most painful blows, I think, mm-hmm. you can go through when you really stacked up and my life is built here and I want to do this for these people. And holy shit, I failed.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's just so heartbreaking.
Yeah.
And it's kind of one of those things that, again, leads to burnout. And you just want to quit because you just can't see the better or the good ending to any of it.
Yeah. And we talked about that a little bit in our episode around women in the medical field and how high the burnout rate is. According to the DSM-5, hyperempathy syndrome is associated with personality disorders and ongoing difficulty to function due to the distress from the syndrome. So this is a thing. It's
right.
like recognized. And here are some of the key symptoms. Breakdown of identity and loss of social skills. Mood swings. A need to solve everyone's problems to cultivate the image of being valuable and needed by constantly doing favors for others. Finding it hard to say no to people for fear of disappointing them, lack of boundaries, overprotectiveness to an extreme, going so far as to impact the autonomy of others, and all of this can lead to resentment from feeling that no one understands you, they think you're being overprotective, don't they see? I'm just being nice, and it can, impact your immune system.
Yeah, so I feel personally attacked right now.
Sorry, this is an intervention for you.
Just from reading this list. And you know what, though? I mean, yes, these things are very real, and these things are very personal to me because I will absolutely, this is me to a T. I'm a bossy one.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a no. Hey.
I agree too quickly, sorry.
Yeah, stop that. It's funny because in my little apartment complex, it's like a Ford quadplex. I'm the mother of the group to the point that they go on trips. And I'm like, can you text me when you make it there? I have no reason to. We don't live together. I barely know them. Well, I do know them. They're really good friends, but like they're neighbors. That's it.
Yeah.
But that I feel the need to make sure they're okay. I'm also the same one that goes around parties. Have you had enough food? Did you eat this? Did you want to try this? How about I give you this? Like it's just an overall need to make sure you're comfortable and that you're happy. And because if you're anxious, I'm anxious, I see it, and I'm nervous, and I hate the feeling of, like, someone not feeling welcome. Mm-hmm. That gives me nightmares. Like, when I was younger, I would cry about that.
Aww.
If I felt like someone felt like they were left out. Like, aww. I was in turmoil about all of that. But I'm not going to stick it to all of the workers out there, all of our therapists and social workers and teachers and nurses and medical people. I know I'm leaving out so many who are pretty much in combat all the time in their jobs, but it's so hard not to be these things and trying to be effective.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like kind of like, how do you find those boundaries? And you do, and you have to. And the reason we want to talk about this is because, again, people who have gone through trauma, like myself, want to be in a field that can help others. And I can guarantee, if not 50%, way more probably, of social workers and people who are in protective type of services, and including nursing and all of that, is because they have gone through something and they want to make something better,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
And I think part of our problem in that is we have put so much of our identity in doing good
mm-hmm.
that if we don't see the results, especially in a lifetime, sometimes I feel like I've never seen a good result, that you have failed in life.
Mm-hmm.
End of things. So for me, it goes as deep as to say that I've used my trauma because I want to say I went through these bad things to do these good things. And then when I don't have the end result of doing good things, it just feels like I failed. and which is absolutely untrue. Mm-hmm. And I have to tell myself that all the time. I have to tell other people that all the time. And I would tell our listeners, those who are out there who know exactly what I'm talking about, you have not failed. Just because in itself that you care and are trying, that has done so much more for our society than anything else. That's probably why we haven't completely crumbled mm-hmm. into the nastiness that it could be. Just to go on my tangent.
the patented Samantha
there
tangent.
There it is. Whew. And I'm having to have a lot of those, especially when I'm this passionate.
I remember once somebody asked me, like, if you could go back to this event and not have gone through it, would you? And I had to think about it for a minute because I was like, well, I'm not. The obvious answer would be yes, but then at the same time, I don't know what I would have done or become. So there is that kind of weird.
Right.
If I went through this, at least it meant this.
Right. I mean, it went as far as I'm sure you. I know you already said it that at least it didn't happen to someone else.
Yeah.
Like that's the underlying bit as well. Like which is absolutely not true that you were meant to handle this situation because we're going to throw out that whole you're only given as much as you can handle. That's not necessarily true. Sometimes you're just given really shitty hands. And that's what happens. But in the end, usually people who've gone through these things come out. I mean, for me, and I know like for you, at least it wasn't someone else. At least it wasn't your siblings, as you were spoken about. And at least it wasn't other kids in the, you know, orphanage for me. That's how I think things through. But at the same time, yeah, it sucks. Mm-hmm. I still don't want to remember that.
No. Nope. And going back to this whole hyper-empathy thing, science is looking into why that happens. And all of the research is pretty new, but it points to it possibly being a genetic disorder.
Oh, really? Well, mm-hmm. I did read a case when we were looking through this about a woman who went through a brain injury mm-hmm. and coming out with hypersensitive to the point that it was physically hurting her, mm-hmm. This hyper-empathy. And beforehand, she did not have any of those mm-hmm. types of symptoms. So that's really fascinating. I would love to know more and what exactly is completely wrong with me.
This syndrome and too much empathy in general, particularly in women in heterosexual relationships, can lead to women justifying the actions of abusive or psychopathic partners. People who are too empathetic might be unable to recognize or too ready to excuse predatory behavior.
Right. And then at the same time, we also want to talk about the women who have children in these relationships. And oftentimes, I've heard it many times, they're good to my kids. And or they're protecting their kids and or is financial. As we've talked about previously, the financial thing is like, yes, all these bad things are happening to me, but without him, my kids could not do A, B, C, and D.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that is absolutely part of that whole empathy thing. Again, protecting others, blaming themselves, and then just feeling like I deserve this maybe.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And it's such a whole, again, also these partners understand that.
Right.
And use that and manipulate that, as we've talked about previously with grooming.
Mm-hmm.
They know and they can see it. And this is why I talked about the fact that domestic violence as well as partner violence can be a thing that we looked at as a manipulative thing, and why we say that is grooming.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that is that personality factor of, okay, well, you can see she's easy to manipulate. I can groom her like this way, and this is where we go. Mm-hmm. And too much empathy would be a very good point in what you see.
Mm-hmm. And related to this, a tendency to overgive might come from a past abusive relationship or growing up with a narcissistic guardian. It can also result from being in a community that focuses on giving. I read in places like a religious community. Or I would say women in general being socialized to be that way.
And we talked about religion before as part of like grooming as well. Mm-hmm. I know we did that, but that honestly comes through when you see, especially in the past, that women were told not to leave their husbands. Literally, when they talked about the Bible, the only reason a woman could leave a man was for adultery, and that's after being like confronted by four or five, and they could not, and the woman could not remarry,
mm-hmm.
or that would be considered adultery. They don't talk about the physical abuse. They don't talk about physical violence. They don't talk about rape as a thing. You know, all of these things that we know right now that is wrong, it's never really addressed. So therefore, I know I have seen in my lifetime where women were told to stay with their men mm-hmm. in an abusive relationship because you made a vow to God. Like, yeah. I literally have heard that, and it's the most unreal thing to me that I don't quite understand that. And honestly, we could even talk about today's abortion laws coming through, mm-hmm. talking to about the fact that women who are going to be made to have a pregnancy or be charged, even if it was against their will, mm-hmm. that's absurd. And that's a very religious idea. And this is the whole level of, like, from what I can gather, empathy. I'm not going to say empathy. Of course, there's a whole underlying turn with, like, a patriarchy, and this the whole idea that women can't be trusted and women's bodies should be monitored, whatever. But there's also this bit where the women feel, especially women who have had children, will say, well, you've never had children. This is murder. I would never do this to my child. So that level of weird empathy comes to an unborn being, I guess, just for all intents and purposes, mm-hmm. a fetus, essentially, and going beyond the regular, yeah, but what about the woman? What about who, again, should be trusted? Never mind that, but the empathy goes on to the fetus. And that's from the women in itself, which I'm thinking, but you're a woman. You want someone to tell you whether you can be trusted with your body? I mean, yeah, I guess it goes into that level to me.
That's an odd example because it's almost like an example of having no empathy for the woman, but all this empathy for the unborn child and, frankly, men and, like,
right.
the family.
I mean, that's because some of the women that I work with, and just being in the South and just being with an old, you know, in an old-fashioned town where they are supporting this bill, which seems ridiculous in itself, especially they're talking about criminalizing doctors, criminalizing women who may have late-term abortions, not because they want to, but because right. they have to medically. Mm-hmm. And they still are talking about penalizing them. You see these impassioned bits from these other women who talk about why don't they care about the children? This is murder. This is murder. And it's really hard to argue murder. Let's just leave that out there. Uh-huh. But that's where they're coming from. And a lot of them genuinely break down on that note without thinking about the women perspective, mm-hmm. the adult female who is having to go through this, what you may not understand the background of. Whether it was incest, rape, or whether it's medical problems that are happening. They just don't give allowance to that. They just think about that unborn child mm-hmm. or fetus. I'm just going to leave it at the fetus before mm-hmm. they're actually developed into
sure.
a mature child, whatever you want to call it.
Right. And we've been talking already about certain careers that are higher risk for this empathy burnout. And yeah, it is people in kind of caring fields, and it's something that is called frequently compassion fatigue.
Right. And I pulled this out from one of the articles written in a social work magazine talking about too much empathy or how to self-care. Mm-hmm. And they talk about secondary trauma is a reaction to dealing with other people's situations, but burnout is related to the job environments in which we work. And the stresses attached to these jobs and requirements like paperwork or poor supervision or support, which is a constant when you have to have these giant results with very minimal support, it's impossible. Mm-hmm. And that's when burnout happens because you really can't do much. And when burnout and the secondary trauma are both present in an individual, it's to be said they are experiencing compassion fatigue. Mm-hmm. So just exactly what it is. You're just tired, and you just want to give up, and you just don't want to think about it, and you just don't care. Mm-hmm. That's kind of where it comes down to, and you become numb, and you become jaded. But there is something they were talking about also, that there is something called compassion satisfaction and being satisfied with doing the work of a carer. In other words, gratification for helping others makes the strains of the work worth it. And it's not uncommon to see social workers continuing their jobs because even after the breakdowns, and that was me. I literally had a breakdown when I was a child abuse investigator, went and did nannying, and then I came back because I missed advocating. Mm-hmm. But it's still really hard to continue day to day sometimes. And I think one of the things that doesn't happen enough, now when I tell people I'm a social worker, the response is usually, oh, wow, that's hard to almost pity. That is not the best reaction to get sometimes.
No.
But, I mean, I think we need to do more. I would love it if people truly heard what was happening and instead of deeming them the bad guys. Because if you watch, like, I'm going to really be old, Law & Order, like, SVU, the social workers were always the bad guys. They were never, they always lied or they did this. Like, it was awful. Or they just didn't care enough or they weren't compassionate enough and they were just too cold.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, come on, guys. Why do you have to make them look like the bad guy here? You know, of course, what's her name? The main character.
I've never seen it.
What?
I know. I exist outside of space and time. I've never seen an episode of Law & Order, anything.
Well, Olivia was her name in the character. She was always the most compassionate one, caring for the kids and all of that.
Uh-huh.
And there's an episode Ice-T has with, his name is Finn. In the character, it's been a long time.
Okay.
Has a battle with one of the social workers, and she gets blamed for this death of this child. Like, it was this whole big thing, and I hate that. And even in the news today, you read so much about how, and don't get me wrong, it may have absolutely been the worker's fault. Why didn't they check up on this child? Why didn't they do this? Whatever. But they don't understand the backlash of what things happen, like how the judicial system works.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact is, we honestly, caseworkers cannot do much without the approval of someone higher up
mm-hmm.
at all times. But that's what you see them as, the bad guy. And I think stuff like that. And then also, that's one of the big cuts that happen. They don't get paid much.
Mm-hmm.
They don't get any kind of rewards. And they don't really get many raises. I don't think there's been any raise in the state of Georgia in a while.
Mm-hmm.
Not even cost of living, I don't think. But that could, I haven't been in defects in the children's, the investigative side in a long time. But I know when I worked there, there wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of the problem is, yes, this is really nice, and I would love to fix things, and I would love my work to be this. But if I can't take care of myself, and if I'm being blamed and all the time that I'm scared to death of being blamed for something
mm-hmm.
that I can't control, how do you keep going?
Right.
And how do you get that compassion satisfaction?
Passion, satisfaction. I like that.
Yeah.
I think Paige from Charmed was a social worker. And I think Christy Alley from It Takes Two for the Mary-Kate and Ashley Path of the episode. I don't know. She worked. She was involved somehow.
I was going to say, if I'm a witch and I have powers, that would be fantastic. Oh, it would be fantastic. I could do so many things with some telepowers.
Telepowers. That's like you're calling in. Teleworking, but
yes. If I had some powers in general,
Sure. Absolutely.
I could do all the things.
Or whatever your power allowed you to do.
Well, yeah.
You could do that thing specifically. But we do have little bit more for you listeners. But first, we have one more quick break for a word from our sponsor.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Tennessee just sounds perfect, whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands. not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor. So we wanted to include in here tips on practicing good empathy, because a lot of what we've been talking about is the negative side of empathy or the extreme.
Right. Oh, that's the too much empathy. What this could look like if you have too much empathy.
Right. But if you want to practice good empathy, you want to practice self-awareness, openness, and non-judgmental listening. If you notice that you are reacting to something emotionally, then you'll want to take a moment, take a breath, clear your mind, and focus on how you want to feel, which is open or like listening.
Right. Yeah. And again, I think, again, one of the things that we talked about with in general with trauma and PTSD and being triggered, which is kind of what happens here, sometimes meditation, doing the 1, 2, 3 technique or being grounded, it actually is helpful for that as well.
Mm-hmm. To prevent burnout, experts recommend setting up boundaries. Take care of yourself, have compassion for yourself, and be mindful of your needs. Recognize toxic behavior in others and learning to keep a distance and learning that that is okay. It doesn't mean you aren't empathetic, but you're keeping your identity and emotions from getting mixed up with others. And I call this responsible empathy. 'Cause if you get burnout or become numb, you can't help others as successfully.
Yeah, and as we talked about before, the fact is if you're not caring for yourself, how are you expected to care for others?
Mm-hmm.
And all of that, again, is to remember that you are a person and you have flaws and you can make mistakes and it's okay. And I think that's one of the biggest things is to forgive yourself and to allow yourself to be human. It's really hard when you want to fix things. It's really hard when you feel too much. I mean, believe me, I beat myself up every day. I sometimes sit down and just go back over the wrong things that I did, which is a horrible practice. Please don't do this. And if you do, do what I also do. Hug onto your dog. If you don't have a dog, look at pictures of what makes you happy, whether it's to read fan fiction, play some D&D. Actually, you and I have gotten into some card games. I'm now jumping into that world. I feel like I have to start concentrating a little more so I can be a part of the crew now. But yeah, doing things and allowing yourself to turn off your brain. And I know I talked about babysit your brain movies type of thing. So turn that off. And it's so hard. And whether it's sometimes I like to play Candy Crush. Sometimes I actually love Wordseek things. Those are word finders. Love those. And just sitting and watching reruns where I don't have to think about anything else, but I can just concentrate on whatever nonsense is happening. And that's really important too. And it's important to, again, be empathetic towards yourself and remember, again, you're not God, a God. You're not a superhero as much as you would like to be. And even the superheroes have bad days. We saw this on all of the Avengers movies.
I mean, every movie is like a superhero's bad day.
Right. And being caring for yourself and keeping a distance, like you said, and shutting things off doesn't mean you're being numb or callous. And sometimes that can regenerate you. And to literally, one of the big things we've been talking about in our own field, taking a vacation, turning your email off, turning your settings off, go out of the country if you can afford it, and turning your phone off. If not, literally giving your phone, your work phone, and your computer to someone else and walk away. Like, and I will say, up until last year, I never did this. I never took more than 2 days off. And even then, I had my phone on me all day, all times, because in the back of my mind, I'm like, this is affects a child's life. Like, it doesn't just stop because I'm on vacation. But because I wasn't doing this, I was failing them because I was becoming more and more angry. I became resentful at my job, you know, and then the fact that I had to invest so much. And I would look around, I'm like, people are doing this like me, which is not true at all. That was me being one of the hyper empathy symptoms that we talked about earlier. But yeah, just being able to walk away physically and literally from whatever it is that has taken you down this bad path.
Right. And we are planning a beach vacation.
We are. I'm so excited.
Other things that have come up a lot in our conversation around good coping, but it also useful here, are things like, yeah, meditation, yoga, exercise, or something that helps you let go of your absorbed negative emotions and helps you practice mindfulness.
And again, community is really, really important. And I have a really great community for different aspects of my life and my coworkers. I think I've talked about the coworker I had when I was at as a child abuse investigator. We literally would take Saturdays and go hiking all day.
Yeah.
And we would talk about whatever was happening, but then we would also talk about our personal life. And mm-hmm. It was really nice and releasing. Even now, I will get together with my coworker. We leave the office, go to lunch, and have a long lunch where we can actually talk about our day, what's going on, and checking in on each other. And then when I get with my community and my friends, when we can come out and I can give like a 10-minute, oh, this is the worst, mm-hmm. and then come to, oh, but this has been really hilarious. This is what's happening here, and this is what's happening here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's really important to not isolate yourself, again, what we were talking about. And it's really easy to do so, especially when I feel like I'm being toxic, not only to myself,
mm-hmm.
but it could be to others. Or sometimes I just don't have the energy to talk, which, again, being alone is good, too. Mm-hmm. Like, you just need to have balance.
Yeah.
And know yourself and know what works and what works when.
Mm-hmm. I did, last weekend, I did the week hike to heal,
right.
which you heard from the founders in a previous episode. But they did this thing I loved, which was you had to speak for 2 minutes only positive things in your life someone. And you couldn't have any qualifiers in it. You couldn't be like, well, yeah. No, so that was really cool.
Wow.
And if you ever are experiencing a bad day or something, I would recommend it. It
right.
was like surprisingly hard, but
yeah.
It was
oh
good.
Yeah, those are difficult when you have to be nice to yourself out
mm-hmm.
loud.
Yeah,
and you're not used to doing that.
Yeah,
it's kind of like, I like my hair today.
mm-hmm. I was like, I've watched all the Marvel movies. Another okay, but in the context of trauma, I wanted to include here as well. One of the main reasons I never have spoken up about it before is because I didn't want other people to feel bad. I felt this responsibility for making everyone happy. So
right.
I think that's another. It's almost like anticipating somebody's empathy.
Right.
So that's another thing. And my D&D character, who is based on a character I wrote in a book, she was an empath. Like, she could feel everybody's, what they were feeling, and she suffered for it.
Right.
She suffered, and it pretty much killed her. So.
Mm. I mean, mm-hmm. yeah, again, that is obviously an extreme version. But
very.
Sometimes, yeah, I definitely feel that. I definitely have moments where if I hear something,
mm-hmm.
or if I see something, or if I know about something, anything that has to do with child trauma, that has to do with adoption, fostering, it gets me.
Mm-hmm.
It gets me every time. Obviously, it's so close to me anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel it. I feel that over again. It shuts me down sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
I remember I was asked, I think I was offered a job for adoption agency, and I just couldn't do it. I was
mm-hmm.
like, this is too close.
Yeah.
I don't know if I can actually survive doing that portion.
Mm-hmm. And for me, working on this show, I built something that I called the callus,
of course.
Which I think is that it's essentially the distance because it was so difficult. And some days I would leave work wrecked. And we wanted to close out here right. with some tips from Dr. Shelley Jane, who wrote a whole book that is about PTSD called The Unspeakable Mind. And she had some tips.
Right. I asked her because I think it was so personal for me because all of these
mm-hmm.
things were fantastic new ideas and new concepts that she was bringing out. And she was talking about this as in like a physical medical field. So I'm like, that's completely different to the usual when we treat PTSD as a mental health thing.
Mm-hmm.
She's taking it as a physical medical thing, which is fantastic because that's exactly how it should be looked to get to the root of a lot of it. But during that time, I did want to ask, what is your advice? Because she talked about she'd been in this for 20 years,
mm-hmm.
and that's unheard of. And she still loves it. And she does a passion project about it, which is fantastic. And some of the stories in there were heartbreaking,
mm-hmm.
as you and I talked about. And so one of the first things, one of the big things I wanted to know is, what would you say to those who are in this field and who want to remain in this field? How do they care for themselves? So here you go.
trauma is infectious, right?
Right.
Anybody who through the course of their profession is routinely exposed to traumatic situations, like bearing witness to trauma, whether it be like first responders, whether it be military, whether it be, you know, mental health professionals, healthcare professionals, I think we have to recognize it for what it is. We are at high risk of being exposed to trauma. This is like my 20th year of being a doctor. Actually, last year marked 20 years.
Wow. And,
you know, I feel like as I was reaching that 20-year mark, I feel like there was a lot of residue that had been building up. You know, in your clinical experiences day to day when you're trying to take care of patients, you know, there's what happens in real time, right? You meet them, you make an assessment, make a diagnosis, you come up with a treatment plan. But there is so much that happens in that visit. There are so many other dimensions that get touched on: moral, ethical, philosophical, emotional, psychological, not only for the patient, but for me too. And they often don't get dealt with in real time, right?
Mm-hmm.
You don't have time to deal with everything. You have to kind of do the work that needs to be get done to kind of get things moving, you know. And when those other dimensions do not get attended to, I think issues start to build up. And it's like a stubborn kind of residue or a stubborn stain. You know, you start to lose your shine. There's definitely something burning inside of me that needs to get out. And I think from a kind of creative angle, being able to draw on 20 years of clinical experiences and kind of relive them and hash them out through the process of writing was really valuable. I felt like I could leave a lot of stuff on the page. I think I emerged feeling lighter, more rejuvenated, and hopeful that, you know, maybe I can do this for another 20 years. So for me, in answer to your question, I think the writing is what helped me personally. One thing I don't think healthcare professionals and caregivers, what we don't do enough of, is just admit that what we do is really, really hard, right? What the work we do and the circumstances under which we operate are really hard. And I do feel like we live in this world that celebrates the trivial and that doesn't value doing complicated things where you're not necessarily going to get a massive return on your investment. So I think there's this cultural turn where we have to reclaim that what we do is important, must be done, but it's really, really hard. So I think setting these realistic expectations is really important. And then, of course, that's why it's really important. You have your own ways of caring for yourself and getting any attention that you might need, you know, mental health-wise, health-wise. And so self-care, I think, is an absolute non-negotiable if you're going to do this type of work. By doing something for yourself, you're going to survive another day to do something for somebody else. So it's not being selfish. It's having healthy boundaries.
That brings us to the end of this episode. And for our self-care bit, my D&D fact, this one should have gone at the beginning, but recording times are hilarious.
All hilarious.
So I'm actually pretty new to Dungeons & Dragons. And when we first started playing, I was super nervous because I was like, improv.
You were
so
really nervous.
Rules.
Like, you texted me about that.
I was like, Samantha, I can't do it. And there was somebody in our group who I knew, but I didn't know her very well. And I was nervous about playing. I think it's one thing if it's a group of friends that you
right.
know really well, but if
right.
you throw someone in there, you're like, oh no. But together, we are we're a bit impulsive, as I've said. And our motto is Fools Rush In. And I had koozies made for us in the Game of Thrones font that say that.
I want one.
Oh, you want one?
I want one.
Maybe I could sell these.
Yeah.
No, Game of Thrones would sue me.
They would sue you, but I just want one.
Okay. I will gift you one.
I feel like we should give a listener one that's like super into yeah. it. We need to do like a game. Oh, we are going to do the get together. So maybe we could give a couple away then.
Oh, that's true. Very. What a fun story to tell someone. I got this from a podcast where she plays D&D. And then anyway.
I think it works.
So this player that I didn't know very well, in our first session with her, we were trying to figure out this cave thing. And there was a small opening with running water. And it was the only way into the next room. And she could turn into animals, but only animals that she saw. And she had seen, like, a crab. So she turned into a crab, but she couldn't crawl up the wall. So we had to roll, because that's how D&D works. You roll dice. We had to roll to see if we could successfully throw the crab like a Thrisbee. And we succeeded. Roll to throw crab is one of my favorite roles we've ever done.
So was she so excited about this, or was she like, what was her response? Because I can't imagine saying, I have this idea, and then like, oh yeah, I'm going to throw you like a Frisbee. And then you're like, okay, cool.
I think it was her idea. I call her the chaos player.
All right.
She always has the most hilarious creative ideas. One of them is she wanted to fill my bag of holding with water and then turn into a whale. And I can't remember why, what purpose that would have served.
As a person who's never played D&D and still don't quite understand D&D, all of these things that are in my head, I wish you could understand how, like, dissected each of these things are for me, that I'm like, what? This doesn't belong to this. And wait, I have to cut it and paste it.
You're going to come to one of these.
I am
going
to come to one of these.
And you'll see.
I'm excited.
It'll be fun.
I'm excited. Mm-hmm. And then my part to the fact, we're talking more about Peaches. I actually put a really cute Instagram story of her in our little neighborhood. I put a little flower crown on her that she ate immediately after the pictures were taken and made a mess in my living room with it. That's my fault. But I got an offer. She was like, they were like, this little company was like, oh, we love your dog. We would love for you to have her model our stuff. And I was like, first of all, this doesn't look real. But if I'm going to get some free dog things, sure. Mm-hmm. So I emailed them. They're like, well, it's $25. I was like, okay. No. Mm-hmm. First of all, my dog doesn't like to wear things. This would be for my benefit more than her benefit. Secondly, I don't have the money because I have to pay for this dog's grain-free food as well as like the grain-free treats and her baths and all. Nah, this dog eats better than I do, essentially.
Yeah.
So, nah, I'm not buying a $50 handkerchief thingy to go around her neck.
No.
Is it a scarf? What are those?
I think it's a handkerchief.
Is it a handkerchief?
Dog scarves. Dog scarves? I'm sure they exist.
Trying to think of it. But anyway, I was really excited that my dog was going to be a model, and then I felt very, very tricked.
I love the idea of you being like a
dog mom model.
Yeah, like, you know, at the beauty pageants with the parents, but it's like just Peaches.
It's just Peaches.
Yeah, I like it.
The entire time. Yeah, like, and her looking at me like, what? What? She would hate it.
Yes, she would. If you have any self-care stories you'd like to share, we would love to hear them. You can email us at momstuff@howstuffworks.com, or you can find us on Twitter at momstuffpodcast or on Instagram at stuffmomnevertoldyou. Thanks, as always, to our producer, Andrew Howard.
Thanks, Andrew.
Thanks to you for listening.
Send me your stuff. I want to know how you care for yourself, social workers, and people out there.
Stuff Mom Never Told You is a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Tennessee just sounds perfect, whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.